You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beege, the optimistic newbie developer.
Complete Developer Podcast is supported by listeners like you. We are now on Patreon at www.patreon.com/Complete Developer Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of Complete Developer Podcast. This week, we are talking about motivation. Specifically, we'll be getting into how to obtain it, how to maintain it, and how to protect it. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
Not much at all. I actually had 3 days off last week. I went in for one day. And then, of course, we were off Friday because it was before Christmas. And we're off today because it's after Christmas. So I worked one day last week. And so I really didn't have to do much other than some project management stuff and some knockout JS stuff and all that. Nothing particularly new. I did spend 3.5 hours in a sensory deprivation tank last Tuesday after getting a massage and getting a chiropractic adjustment.
Nice.
Which is great, except you get out of there and you just sit for like 30 minutes because it really like messes you up. And I also grossly overate yesterday and cooked a lot more food than was absolutely needed. So we're like trying to pawn leftovers off on the neighbors, and that's not working because they all did the same thing.
'Tis the season.
Yeah. And other than that, I really haven't done much except for playing a little bit with .NET Core. And I found some of the nice little Yeoman templates, which you and I are going to discuss after we get off this podcast. Cool. I'm mainly just trying to get stuff ready for the new year. That's pretty much the extent of it. So how about you?
Been debugging and kind of working on other people's code, actually, at work. We've got one project that the main .NET developer, he went to a different department, and they're right about to go into production. So they brought me in to help out with kind of finalizing it, getting rid of the last few things. But did get to fight to kind of an interesting in-Hibernate problem. Some columns were being written to in a table, but not all of them. And so my first thought was, all right, this is probably a spelling error between the UI and the API. I mean, that's right. Happened before. Nope.
Was it a mapping config?
That was my very next thought, and nope, it wasn't. And I actually wrote a test and followed the data through
all the steps.
Making sure it went all the way. And I even had it print out the SQL that it was writing.
Did you have another programmer that was a goober and renamed fields between the incoming model and the business object?
Yes, but that wasn't the problem. So,
don't you hate it when you find somebody to blame it on and it's still not them?
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't until I talked to the DBA on the team about the problem, because I'm like, all right, it's not in the API, because I checked the mappings, I checked the converter, everything was going through. And she said, well, what order are you writing to the columns in? There's a funny little thing about SQL that sometimes if you have a large varchar,
it'll cut off other stuff.
Yeah, it'll cut off other stuff. And so we had to write that first. And I just moved the order, poof, it worked.
Yep.
That took us a while because we had to track that down. On a personal note, my truck broke down again.
Ugh. Man.
Same problem.
Yeah.
And so I took it back to the place that fixed it the first time. And, you know, they said that they would check it out for free and, you know, replace the parts for free because they guarantee their work. And then I asked them to find out what the problem really was, because obviously we're just treating symptoms.
Yeah.
And not the real problem here. So they're working on it now. I am a little worried that this might be a sign I need a new truck or a new used truck, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Because we don't make enough money to get new vehicles.
That's true. True. And if that happens, I'm probably not going to be able to attend Codeland up in New York. Just won't be able to afford it. But Codeland is a conference being put on by our friends at Code Newbies, the most supportive community of programmers and people learning to code. It's going to be in New York on April 21st and 22nd, and you guys can check that out at codelandconf.com. But with all that said, let's go ahead and roll the music and get into some IoTs. So this week for IoTs, I have something kind of based on one of my Christmas presents. I got a Raspberry Pi Zero kit for Christmas, and so I looked up some projects and came across this fun project for the Star Wars lover in all of us. And this is the Pi Saber. With just a Raspberry Pi Zero, a few LEDs, and a pool noodle, you can build a fun toy lightsaber at home. It's kind of a cool project that you can easily do, no soldering involved, and kids can help out. The description is chock full of great photos to help you out, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes. So who's talking to us this week?
Well, we grabbed a comment off of LinkedIn from Javier Garcia. Says, just a really amazing podcast. I've been listening to it for a month, and as a junior software dev, I'm learning a lot with it. I really recommend it for any person interested in software development.
Thanks, Javier. We've got some complete developer swag just for you. Shoot either Will or myself a private message, or you can email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com.
And that's probably better because of all the recruiter spam we get on LinkedIn, we're kind of slow on responding.
True. That's very true. And guys, if you'd like some complete developer swag, leave us a review in iTunes or comment on the website or any of our social media. We're on Path and Tumblr, and we post all our episodes to Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Google+. I also want to take a moment to talk about our friend Bethany Adams. She's released her second book, and so to celebrate, we're going to do another contest where we'll be giving away an autographed copy of one of her books. It'll be the winner's choice, and we'll be announcing the winner the first episode in May. To enter, leave us a review in iTunes. We love seeing those 5 stars. Recently, we've talked about habit formation towards the end of last year, and then kind of about our resolutions a few weeks ago. And y'all, it's easy to come up with a lot of lofty goals at the beginning of the year, but it's not so easy to keep them going. And so we're going to discuss getting motivated and really how to stay motivated so that you can accomplish the goals that you want. Starting off, motivation is defined as the reason or reasons one has for acting or behaving in a particular way, or the general desire or willingness of someone to do something.
Yeah, and that's, I think to some degree, that explains why it's difficult to get motivated and stay that way, because it's not something that you're going to have continuously unless you cultivate it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of reasons for that, and probably the biggest one is inertia. And that's just where you end up finding yourself comfortable enough where you are that you don't actually work towards changing anything.
Since I've been in the workforce, I've seen a lot of developers that they get into a comfortable job, they like it, and that drive, that motivation to keep going kind of fades.
Yeah, and it's really shocking just how far ahead of those developers you can get with, you know, a good year of just solid effort.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they never can catch up because they're not going to get out of the chair and do it. You know, and yeah, I mean, I get the argument, you know, right, that like web forms is good enough, you know, even though, hey, it's dying and none of the new code examples work with it.
Yeah.
You know, let's continue using it. I know developers that are still using, you know, classic Visual Basic and some of those kind of things. And part of that is a speed thing, but part of it is, hey, this is good enough for what I've got to do. Why should I have to change?
I've also seen where developers got stuck by inertia and then realized that they were stuck and they couldn't go anywhere and wanted to make those changes. And it was harder to start those changes once they were stuck in that inertia.
Well, yeah. I mean, and this applies everywhere, right? Like, for instance, if you're 250 pounds overweight and you have diabetes, it's a whole lot harder to get into shape than it is if you're 10 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
Just as a rule, you know, and, you know, they're kind of, it's like accumulating debt almost.
Yeah. Cause you know, you have $500 in debt because, you know, you had to get work done on your car and you paid it off with your credit card versus tens of thousands of dollars in debt because you went to school.
Yeah. Or because you had a car that you kept trying to repair because the seat was comfortable. I mean, that's what'll get you. It's like, oh, I don't want to go through the trouble of buying a new car, so I'm going to keep repairing the junker that I have.
And going deeper into debt, and then...
Yeah, trying to do it.
When it gets to the point you can't repair it anymore, you're kind of stuck paying off the repairs for a car you can't even use.
Yeah. Another one that gets people is fear. Change always comes with risk. Like, you know, anything that you're trying to change. Like, if you're trying to get in shape, you know, you worry about dropping a weight on your foot. You worry that you're going to throw your back out, or that you're going to spend too much money at the gym, or you're going to get sore. you know, there's a lot of things. And, you know, there's also the opportunity cost. And that risk tends to get magnified a lot. So the new thing that you're about to try, you'll think about the risks of it, but you won't think about the risks of the thing you're already doing. And we, you know, we kind of tend to have, you know, a blind spot of, okay, I've survived doing what I'm doing so far with no real problems. But if I try to do this new thing, all these other things could go wrong. And it's like, well, you've just, you know, you're just one dice roll away from things going sideways in what you're doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Now there's prioritization. Maybe your goal isn't as important as you say it is because you put other things ahead of it.
Yeah. I mean, I've had plenty of discussions with people, especially when they say they don't have time to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, well, I don't have time to start a side business. I don't have time to, you know, learn another programming language or, you know, extend my skill set after work. And you're like, okay, well, what does it look like when you get home from work? And they go, well, you know, I drive an hour and 15 minutes in traffic to get home. Widen your house closer. Well, I like living out there. Okay, that's fine. So what do you do when you get home? Well, you know, I like to take the kids and go somewhere and get dinner and then come back home. And then, you know, I watch TV for 2 or 3 hours. And then, then by then the night's over and I got to go to bed. And I'm like, okay, that's fine that you prioritize these things, but like you don't have a lack of time. You're not time poor. You just prioritize other things.
It's easier for people to say that to externalize it and say, I don't have time, than for them to actually admit what the issue is. It's a prioritization issue.
Yeah. And I mean, you and I do this all the time, right? Like every Monday you get a message from me. Hey, do we have a show outline for today? Like legitimately, you've gotten this message for what? Like 3 months straight?
Yeah.
And, you know, I even have a reminder on Sunday afternoons, write a show outline.
Mm-hmm.
It never happens on Sunday. And why doesn't it happen? Well, I could say, oh, I don't have time. You know, I've got a wife, I've got a kid, I've got a house, I've got all these other things to do. I got a side business. But what it really comes down to is at that point, I'm not prioritizing getting ahead on the show over anything else.
Yeah.
Now, when I'm scrambling around Monday going, hey, we're not going to have anything to record, suddenly it's a priority.
That makes sense.
And I know that's been one of your pain points as well, like with my outlines, because it's like last minute. Okay, scan this real quick. Now we're going to record.
Yeah, that really has, because when I write the outlines, I typically do it a day before because I'm worried I'm going to write something wrong. So I want to have a day to think about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting. My typical after work activities, I guess, are I come home, of course, walk the dog, but then I do take some time to just decompress.
Yeah.
And I take about an hour, and I limit myself to an hour or one show, because sometimes a show's an hour and a half or something like that. But one show that I watch on TV, and then I get up and I go do some work.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I could.
Yeah, you could veg out and just not do anything. And in fact, you could stay up late where you're not functional tomorrow. Another thing that will get people on this a lot is impatience. It's really easy to think that success is going to be less effort than you think it is. I can tell you this as somebody that's working on a book right now. Like, you have to write, and you have to write. And when you're done with that, you have to write. And it's really easy to look at that and go, oh, well, I can crank out, you know, 10 pages in an hour, which I can actually do. But that doesn't translate into actually having a book. And so it's really easy when you have the wrong estimation of how difficult something is. It's really easy to not start it because you think, oh, well, I can start it whenever because it's easy. Or to be so overwhelmed by it, which is the next one, is, you know, you're like, okay, I have too much to do. How am I going to write a 250-page book? Like, where do I even start?
On both of these, one thing that I've noticed and other people have noticed too is that successful people make it look easy.
Yeah.
Because you don't see the background. You don't see what goes on behind the curtain, all the work and effort they do. All that's seen is the polished, finished product.
Yeah, because it's not good marketing otherwise.
Mm-hmm. It's like working on a difficult coding problem. You know, you don't push all the different iterations that you went through to get to a concise solution. You only push it once you've finished working on it.
Right. And it makes it a lot easier. I mean, one thing we had a discussion about with version numbers at work was, hey, you know, we can put a build number as the final, you know, piece. You know, we're doing SimVer. And, you know, show the build number. But then we're going to have clients that go, well, I'm like 1,000 builds behind and they're going to get wound up over it. Mm-hmm. So we're like, yeah, we're just going to truncate that off. It's going to be a zero every time.
Yeah.
You know, we have to have it for our internal tracking, but they shouldn't ever have it. And you got to realize that most of the people you see being successful are doing something kind of like that for their audience. That's what we do. I mean, crap, you don't know. If you're listening to this, you do not hear all this crap we cut out of this podcast.
Or all the times Will has coughed in this episode alone.
I swear, I don't know what the deal is. It's
But no, seriously, though, he's right. It's you're seeing or you're hearing, actually, a finished product and not seeing the hours of work that goes into creating that finished product.
Another problem is ingratitude. And that's where you spend more time thinking about what should be here and ruminating over the fact that some of it isn't. Mm-hmm. Then you spend looking forward to what you want and making that happen. That will completely crush your motivation. I mean, everybody knows somebody, you know, especially if you're, you know, well into your 30s, everybody's got somebody in their social circle that looks back on high school and the stuff that went wrong in high school, and it still characterizes them today. And, you know, what should have been different? And it's like, dude, you got out of high school and you're 18 and you're, you know, I don't know, you're 36. You've had half your life to not have that problem. Like, you could have fixed it by now or done something, but you think about high school more.
And then the other side of it is, you know, the people that were the stars in high school.
Yeah. Looking back and going, I should still have that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of an ingratitude thing because it's really a notion of I deserve this. I should have this and not have to work for it. And the final thing that, you know, we find that gets in the way of motivation is meaninglessness. And that's really just not understanding what the point of it all is. I'm sure you talked to a few of these people because you went to med school and they washed out probably the first or second semester and they were hell bent on, I'm going to be a doctor. Well, why are you going to be a doctor? Because I want to be a doctor. And like it's turtles all the way down with that discussion. It's like, no, it's one thing if you want to help people. It's another thing even if you just want to make a crap ton of money.
Not really. It's kind of hard to do that in medicine. There's easier ways to make a lot of money.
There's easier ways, but that will motivate some people. And like they have a purpose. Like, I want to make a lot of money and own a yacht and, you know, it's these other things. Whereas if you just go, yeah, I want to be a doctor. Well, why do you want to be a doctor? Cause I want to be a doctor. I want to be a software developer.
Why? Like,
yeah. Why? I mean, we've talked to people in Code Newbie / developer launchpad groups that's the thing. And it's like, you're not going to make it. If that's your motivation is like, this is the end in itself. It doesn't get you anywhere. It's meaningless. And that will destroy your motivation typically suddenly. So we've come up with kind of a short list of things that will help you get motivated and stay that way. And these are things that kind of come out of both of our own experiences and from watching other people. Mm-hmm. Cause you can kind of learn a lot that way as well. And the big thing here is to actually consciously think about your motivation and how to maintain it so that you can versus it being something that's external to you that gets imposed on you. And the first one is take time every day to plan towards reaching your goals. Come up with concrete steps that you can achieve today to get you closer to where you're trying to get. If you do the meditation thing, mix this into it, it will really help focus things.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I was learning to be a programmer, that was something that I did each day was I had goals for, all right, I want to accomplish this, you know, this month, this week, but then broken down into the days. And I would review those each day when I sat down to work on stuff. All right, what am I working on today? And how is that going to affect my long-term goals?
Right. You know, and part of this too is just to allow you a little bit of, because when you zoom in on stuff, most things are not that hard. And so being able to do this every day breaks, you know, forces you to break stuff into chunks that you can actually handle and be realistic about. You know, this is, you know, I mean, I take time in the mornings to figure out what I'm going to do that day and where I think I'm going to be by the end of the day.
When I started learning Angular, because a lot of the jobs that I was looking into wanted someone that knew Angular, I started off with data binding, and that I learned that piece. Like, I had, I think, about a week where I'm like, all right, I'm going to learn Angular data binding. And I went and found tutorials on that topic and went through them and practiced on my own and focused on that topic. And then I moved on to another one and another one and so on until I knew Angular well enough to say I know Angular.
Yeah. And the other thing too with this planning, like what you did, is besides breaking it down into small enough pieces, like when you're going, okay, I'm drilling too deep into this one thing, but it's part of the plan, versus jumping out and doing something else. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's extremely valuable. Actually take time to focus and plan, and your motivation will, I won't say it necessarily will follow, but it won't bleed away as fast when you do that.
And you actually need to execute on your small goals.
Yeah, there is that.
You know, yeah, you just gotta.
Yeah, well, you know, like the actual execution, like, you know, this drum can't be beaten enough, right? Like if you're planning every day and then you're not doing what you planned, you know, it's really not going to help you, because that's daydreaming. So actually figure out how to forcefully execute on a small slice of what you're trying to do every day. And you know, stuff is just not, you know, big things are not intimidating when they're made up of little things that you can do. And yeah, so the daily execution on small goals is really, really important to get things moving. Like, you'd be shocked at how far you can walk if you just go 100 yards a day. Mm-hmm. When you look back over a year, that's a long walk, and it's worth actually doing this just to maintain your motivation, especially when you're looking back.
That's roughly 364,000 yards.
Yeah. And that's a long walk.
Yeah.
Especially if you're used to just walking 100 yards, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that makes a difference. It makes a difference in your ability to walk that 100 yards, too, if you do it every day.
That's interesting, because I was listening to Code Newbie podcast, and they were talking about the 100 days of coding. She had the guy that started that on, and he was saying that one thing that he found that helped him out was just doing it, coding every single day.
Yeah, it's a spaced repetition.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, like, you know, when your kids are in school and they're learning their multiplication tables, like, they have to practice it every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order for it to stick. Or the you remember that stupid song that I think you probably had to sing it in probably third grade or so as well, like, that listed all the states. I can fill a drop down box in code from that now. Like, I can still hear that song in my head, because we sang it every day for like 4 months.
I don't really remember it so much from that as from Animaniacs.
Fair enough. But, so, you know, that daily practice will help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next thing you need to do is to start trying to break bad habits that don't line up with your goals, and doing this side by side with the small things that move forward. This is kind of the other side, if that makes sense. So, like, if you're starting to go to the gym regularly, or you're starting to do some sort of exercise every day, you know, at a light level, cut back on the soda every day. Because, you know, your bad is what holds you back, and your good is what moves you forward. So, if you move forward and you get rid of what's holding you back, you'll go a lot faster.
And we just had an episode the end of last year about habits and habit formation. One of the things that helps to start new habits and to break bad ones is replacement.
Yeah.
So rather than just stopping something, replace it with something. So this is a good, replace a bad habit with a good habit.
Right.
So the example of watching too much television, which is the January goal from that episode. But so let's say you come home and you spend your evenings watching TV, just vegging out. Replace that with something productive. Fun and productive.
Yeah, like writing a game.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Or just going on some of the code challenge websites. They've got coding games where you code as part of the game, or where you try to solve a problem, and it's like a puzzle. And so it's fun, it's enjoyable, but you're also improving your skills, learning stuff, and growing as a developer.
Yeah.
While being entertained. So there, you're replacing the bad habit of just vegging out with a good one.
Right. And it's doing so at a sustainable rate. The other thing we tend to do when we break bad habits and then we start back is you tend to catch up. So, you know, I don't know how many drunks I've known that quit drinking alcohol for a while and then they started back and they became much worse drunks once they did, because they also remember the time between and they didn't replace the habit. So it's well worth it to get, you know, to do this.
Next, you want to internalize the goal that you are trying to achieve. You know, compare your goals to what you actually do, and then adjust one or the other. is what you're trying to achieve, what you're actually moving towards.
Because you want those things to be congruent. You have life goals that are incongruent with the things that you say are your life goals. It tends to create a little bit of pain in your, you know, just in general.
When the direction your life is moving is different from where you want it to go, that's when you have that.
Yeah, you either have to figure out, okay, how can I ride the wave that I'm on, or how can I get to a different wave?
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to be looking at this one and halfway doing it, wishing you were over there. Like, you got to pick one or the other, and you need to do this continuously as you go through your life so that you're actually dealing with things from a position of strength, because the biggest thing that will kill your motivation is feeling like you have no control, and you don't feel like you have control when your life is taking you a direction that's completely different than where you actually want to be.
Yeah, I mean, I completely understand this one because I've experienced it pretty hardcore, because for a long time, my goal was to be a doctor. And for most of that time, my life was going in that direction. And then suddenly it wasn't.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was out of my control. And I had to make a choice to figure out what to do. And I chose to go a different direction. I chose to, well, kind of take a little bit of control over the direction my life was going. All right. I chose
you
to
rode
take
the
a lot
wave.
Of control.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I rode the wave away from becoming a doctor and found the wave I wanted to be on and got on it.
And you have to do this in tech all the time, right? Because there's technology that I really liked working with, and it's gone now. Or, you know, almost nobody's using it. Like, I mean, there's plenty of things that I've run across, and they just aren't there anymore. And you just have to kind of go on, and you have to go, okay, the wave goes this way. If I want to continue, I have to get on that wave.
Yeah, well, you say that, but you're learning a language that is based on something I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, that was the thing too, is like, yeah, within the environment that I was in, that was a place where I could contribute quite a bit.
Yeah. And that was where
the wave was going.
That was one of those things where that wasn't even on your radar
at all.
No, before. And the direction that your life was going took you there, and you chose to change your goals to incorporate that into it.
Right. And I've done the same thing with the project management that I'm doing at work too, because mm-hmm. I didn't want to do, you know, management stuff. But it's weird now, because I've realized that the people that I deal with now, you know, and part of it is me maturing as well.
Yeah.
But part of it is I've also got a better crew around me. And so I see, like, if I'm doing project management and kind of being a little bit of a lead in some circumstances where I'm working, it's not bad. And, you know, I've actually got support, and it's like, well, crap, I could go this way now, because I'm not surrounded by people that it would not have worked with.
Another thing too is do this continually. And I've got an example of a friend of ours that her goal was to become a developer, and she wanted to do .NET development. And she went to a boot camp for that, focused on that. The one thing she did not want to do was Java. You know what? She got a job because the goal was to be a developer. Her job involves a lot of Java. Has some .NET and other things in it, but it's very heavy Java. And she had to adjust one of her goals of, I don't want to write in Java, to accommodate that. Or she could have left the job. But her bigger goal was, I want to be a developer. She had reached that goal. She could lose that goal to keep
the smaller goal,
or she could drop the smaller goal, say, I will learn Java and move forward.
And you kind of have to do that. You have to be capable of adjusting.
And that's just, again, that's something that constantly changes.
Another one that's helpful is if you map your short-term goals that you're doing to something you have to have right now, it's all well and good to go, okay, I'm going to learn to develop software, and I'm going to learn everything I can about Angular data binding, like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. But one thing, if I recall correctly, that you did that I think helped you with success is that you got enough Angular where you could build something, and then you hammered on the data binding, because at that point it became useful.
Actually, I started with data binding.
Well, you have to.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, that was where I
mean, you start and you work out, but you had goals with it. Yeah. I mean, that was the thing. You were like, okay, I'm moving towards something.
I wasn't going to get too deep into that example, but the reason I started with the data binding was because I was working on the contact forms for your company site and my personal blog.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do them in Angular because I wanted to have something to say, look, I built this in Angular. The biggest component of that was the data binding. So I started with what I needed to know to build something.
Yeah. And there's a number of reasons why this works really well. The first is that it forces you to actually find a use for the things you're learning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it makes it realistic. Like, you could have crawled into the internals of how data binding worked and, like, crawled through all the Angular code, which you might have done because you're kind of anal retentive. But a normal human being might not have to do that, right?
Yeah.
They need to know the directives and how all that stuff mm-hmm. is used, and then they can actually produce something with it, because that's what you get paid for.
Yeah.
Is what you produce.
Exactly.
You know, especially at the early levels. You know, so that will force you to focus on things that are actually useful. And, you know, it forces you to prioritize things. The other thing it does is it immediately runs you into the problems that you're going to run into. Like, you know what they are, and you can start working on overcoming them versus having this abstract understanding of how all the pieces fit together and building that up over a long period of time and then getting out there and not having a clue. So it's quite helpful to be able to do that.
It goes back to what I constantly say to people who are just starting out or wanting to learn: build stuff.
Yeah.
Learn by doing. And to do that, set up something you want to build, even if it's nothing new. If it's just, I was building a form for, you know, a contact form for our pages. I could have just gone and
copied one. Yeah.
But I wanted to learn, so I built one. And I went out and I learned the components I needed to build that. It gives you the real world skills of, all right, I've built something that I can show, look, I built this with this technology that you're wanting me to use. And it also teaches you something, and you can say, this is how I learned how to do this.
Yeah. And when you run into problems, you have a real example of what the problem is.
Exactly.
And that tends to get people, the kind of people that are going to help you out, tend to be a whole lot more interested in that than they are in abstract discussion.
Next, you want to go for a single goal.
Yeah. I've got a buddy, David Whitley. He's an old-time strongman, but his thing is don't half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing. The idea here is you go after one goal vigorously, and that keeps your goals from conflicting with each other and allows you to just actually focus.
It'd also help you to evaluate that goal and evaluate if what you're doing is actually moving towards that goal.
Because, I mean, it's very easy, even with goals that seem like they are completely congruent with each other. Like, I want to work on my public speaking skills, and I want to run a successful podcast. Those sound like it's the same thing, right? I'm talking into a mic in either place, and I need to have voice coaching in either place. But there's different components here, right? You shouldn't be going after both of them, because what will happen is the things that you're trying to do to become a speaker will get in the way of being starting out and being a successful podcaster. You can add it on later. You just don't mm-hmm. do it concurrently.
Yeah. Or you could do the podcast first and then become a speaker.
Right. Which is what we're both trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. This is also the whole idea behind unit testing.
Yes.
Is you build it so that you can test one component at a time. So you want to structure your goals, focus on a single goal so that you can go back and say, all right, here's what the goal was. Here's where I am. Did I meet the goal? What did I do that helped me? What hindered me?
Trimming things down to where you can actually keep it in your head is kind of a recurring theme here for your motivation. The next thing you got to do about your goals is shut up about them. Except with a tight circle of trusted friends, other people shouldn't know what your next move is.
You know, unless you have a podcast and you announce your goals for the year.
Right. Well, I mean, but
what we did was we announced a general goal and not the specifics on how we're going to reach it.
Yeah. And we didn't put timelines on some of those things either.
Yeah.
You know, like finishing the book. Okay, I'm going to finish it sometime during the year. But in general, one thing that I've found is that when you tell people what your next move is, there's a certain chunk of people out there that will try to sabotage it. It's very strange how people react when they start seeing you be successful. Another thing that will happen is you get a lot of negativity, or you get behavior attributed to what you're trying to do. So, like, I'm trying to get my podcast to be successful, right? You know, one thing I've figured out at work is to not talk about it that much. And the reason is because it makes people very nervous. And it's things like, well, you're cutting down on, you know, your work hours because you're working on the podcast. It's like, well, I'm not cutting down the work hours. Like, it immediately creates suspicion for people to know what you're doing next. Mm-hmm. And really, frankly, it's not most people's business, right? Like you got a group of friends that you trust that are going to hold you accountable, and you got everybody else, and you don't tell everybody else. It's like the difference between telling your doctor about the color of your bowel movement and telling a table full of random people. Like, those people aren't going to help you anyway. And really, frankly, nobody cares about your crap.
Yeah.
You see where I'm going with this? But your doctor, it's kind of important to him because it's sort of his job to, you know, help you be healthy, because it's more work for him if you're not. You know, like I talked to you about stuff that I'm working on, and I've got my mastermind group. And that's pretty much it that I really go into depth on what I'm doing. Because if you do let stuff out, it tends to backfire in really odd ways. It's a lot more controllable with a smaller group.
It's interesting because you'll have some people that aren't out to get you, but don't want to see you fail. So they'll discourage you from doing anything that might cause you to fail.
Yeah.
And it's not out of any type of spite, but it's out of, I care about this person and I don't want to see them hurt. So I don't want them to do anything that could potentially hurt them.
Yeah. And, you know, and those are the worst, right? Because somebody that cares about you like that, you can't kick them in the shin and walk away. Yeah. You know, like, their motivation was just that they're screwing me by it. It's like that over mothering attitude. And you'll run into that. And then you'll run into people who try to sabotage you without really trying to. It's just sort of like a jealousy thing that comes out at a weird thing.
A lot of times they don't even realize it.
Yeah. So find you a little group of people that can be happy with your success, and don't tell everybody else what you're doing. That will keep the demotivation out. Another thing I like to do is set myself up with rewards at intervals or when I reach particular goals. And the thing is, like, you know this from your psychology background, that like having periodic rewards or random rewards tends to kind of keep people motivated. Like, if you put a rat in a crate, you know, you can train it with rewards that, you know, every 10 times it hits a lever, it gets something. If you can game it enough where you get it at random, it's even better. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a little harder to do, you know, because you're scheduling that for yourself. So you're like the experimenter and the experimentee.
Yeah.
So, yeah, typically what I like to do is go, okay, well, when I finish this thing, I'm going to do this other thing, you know, for fun or whatever. I mean, that's what my, you know, that's what my day off was, hey, I got through another year. I got certain goals done with my writing. Now I'm going to go and I'm going to have a day that's just for me, and I'm not going to do anything work-wise on it.
Yeah, I do that with working on the podcast, where, I mean, I've got my weekly things. Like, I do trivia with a group of friends and a few other things, but I will work hard for about 3 weeks. And if I'm ahead, like we are right now, I'll take a week off from working on the podcast.
Yeah.
I won't edit. I won't do anything. And yeah, sometimes I'll work on other projects during that time, but I'll also make sure I get a little extra TV or video game time in during that week off, because it's sort of a reward for, all right, I worked hard. I got us to the point where I don't have to edit an episode this week for us to produce one.
Well, yeah, it comes down to the human psychological thing that if you feel like you're doing the right thing, there should be a reward. And if that reward is not there, you're going to burn out so fast, it's not even going to be funny.
Yeah.
So you have to put it there if it's not there intrinsically with the thing you're doing. And usually it is there intrinsically, but you kind of have to recognize it and you have to force it out there.
Yeah, true.
You know, that's why, like, dudes at the gym are constantly, like, looking at themselves in the mirror. Now, granted, there's a lot of vanity there too, but some of it is, hey, you know, I've bulked up and I've got my arms bigger and I'm more cut and all that. And I want to see that just as a little reminder, you know, when I'm, you know, towards the tail end of a workout and I'm just completely burned down, to like keep going.
Well, you know, we talked back at the habit formation episode about the decluttering, and I said I keep some clothes around that are a little too small for me. Last week I started wearing those. And I've got ones that are a little smaller than that are now moving their way into my closet from storage, because now I can wear the clothes that, you know, were my motivation before, but they're also my reward, because I have some pretty cool stuff that I'm like, I didn't want to go out and buy
new stuff
just like it, a size bigger. Part of the reward is, you know, now I can wear one of my favorite hoodies because I lost 15 pounds. And that's kind of a intermittent reward, I guess, because I couldn't schedule it. You know, I couldn't say, all right, at this day, I'll be small enough to wear this.
But when I get there,
I will be able to. And that in and of itself was a reward.
Yeah. And I mean, and sometimes you could even have rewards that are a little bit against your goals, just as long as it's very temporary. Like, you know, when I was lifting, I remember, you know, I decided that I'm like, I'm going to buy a fifth of Jack Daniels when I can pull 300 pounds up off the floor. And so I did. And I had bourbon and Cokes for like the next 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, or longer than that, actually, probably. But
yeah, I mean, that's completely fair. Just like part of the reward to myself was also when I went down to visit my family for Christmas, like at Thanksgiving, I didn't eat extra treats. I, you know, had a small plate, just one serving, didn't eat too much. I had some candy, I had some cookies and stuff like that because I was like, all right, one day to reward myself for working hard the last few months. And still, I kept myself to one serving at dinner. And it was a big serving, but it was just one, you know.
I just had one beer. It was a 40, but I had one beer. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that.
But I mean, that does work really well for some things. And, you know, like that's something I noticed too when doing a low carb diet is if I said every Saturday is a cheat day to reward myself during the week, well, what do you do? Well, during the week, you go, okay, I'm not going to indulge in that behavior because I get it Saturday. Like it's almost like a pressure release valve. It's just, it's really valuable to think about how a psychologist would force someone in your position to do what you're trying to do and then do that to yourself. It takes a little bit of introspection and a little bit of experimentation to figure out what will work, but this is very helpful.
It's something that you and I have both learned to do through trial and error.
Yeah. Another thing that's helped me quite a bit is not starting stuff immediately. Instead, schedule when you're going to start it. So go, okay, well, I want to do this one thing, but I'm not going to start it for 2 weeks. And we'll think about it every day, and I'm going to plan every day.
Well, you and I did this with
The podcast. Yeah.
And we actually have friends, because we've made friends through podcasting, that started a couple of months before us that are no longer podcasting.
Yeah.
Because they didn't. And they've said to us, yeah, we should have planned like you guys did.
Well, part of it is your motivation and the anticipation of, okay, now here's the starting gun. And you kind of build that up and build up that excitement and go, oh, I can't start yet. Because it's not time to start yet.
I've kind of been doing that to you inadvertently on some stuff that we're going to work on because I've said I wasn't going to take on any more projects until after the new year.
Yeah.
Basically, I wanted to get settled at my job before I really take on anything else. And I would like to get a new laptop before I really delve into anything.
Well, the other thing is looking forward to like getting together and coding again.
Yeah.
Like that's something that's going to help a lot. And, you know, this is, it's weird how this changes your motivation when you're like, okay, I'm not going to start the thing today. Because people go, oh, you should just go right now. It's like, no, you should build up anticipation so that you have the motivation to reach, you know, the end of the thing.
And yeah, some people may say, because there's the idea of do it, you know, don't talk about it, just go and do it. And this is not contrary to that.
Well, you go and do it if it's something small. If it's something that's big, you really need to have a plan anyway, and building anticipation for yourself into that will get you there faster than if you just go ahead and start.
Yeah. So, you know, planning out your trip before you leave builds that anticipation rather than just hopping in the car and typing it into the GPS on your way.
Yeah. Going to St. Louis. I had a roommate in college that just disappeared for 3 days because he was headed to Kroger's and decided to go to St. Louis because he wanted to go to St. Louis.
You remember this a couple of weeks ago, you said the just hop in your, you said to hop in your car and do
that. Well, I mean,
so I'm what I'm doing is I'm comparing those two.
Well, yeah, the other thing too is planning is part of starting. To some degree, you're already started when you're thinking about it and when you're building the anticipation, but you can manage your mood while you are doing that.
I guess what I'm getting at is don't get trapped in the forever planning.
Right.
Like actually do set a start date.
Yeah, it has to be scheduled.
Yeah, because it's real easy. Like we could have very easily.
We could still be talking about starting a podcast.
Yeah. That's what I was getting
someday
at.
When, you know, when Beach gets a job. Oh, wait, no, Beach has a job. But when Beach gets an apartment, oh, when Beach gets where he's, you know, permanently employed. Well, when Beach gets a new laptop. Well, you know, when I get a new desktop, when Beach gets an apartment big enough to have a recording studio in it.
Yeah.
You know, and you can do that forever. Like it's a thing of you want to schedule something.
You also want to get around people doing the same thing. We've talked about this a lot before, but your peer group determines what behavior you consider normal.
If you're around people that, and bear in mind, this is separate from the group of people that you necessarily report to and tell everything that you're planning.
It's different from your mastermind group.
Right. This is just, hey, get in a group of people that's trying to go in the same direction as you, because the people that are actually headed that way, their behavior will look normal to you once you're around them long enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll assume a lot of the behavioral characteristics of the more successful members of the group.
That's why I really like the group I play trivia with, is because we're all junior developers. Most of us are in our first jobs, or there's a couple that just got out of school. But, you know, we get together and hang out. We kind of talk about what's going on in our lives, you know, so far as what we're doing to achieve our goals. But it's more like friends hanging out and comparing, oh, hey, I had a job interview today, or I got that job that I was going after, and that kind of stuff. Not like the mastermind group that you're in, where it's
numbers.
Yeah.
Details. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. Like, I mean, that's why a lot of people do better when they go to a gym.
Mm-hmm.
Is because you're in there, like if you go to the right gym,
yeah.
You're around people that are trying to get in shape, and that will normalize that behavior for you.
That's why I like to come in here to code.
Yeah.
Because
that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. You sit there and code all day long. And so I was less tempted to, you know, pop over and play on Facebook or play a video game. Whereas if I'd been sitting at home.
Yeah, nobody's going to catch you. And, you know, or if you've been sitting around friends that's what they do all the time. It's very valuable to just get yourself into an ecosystem that enables you to drive forward. Mm-hmm. And that will help your motivation more than anything else. And finally, you've got to ruthlessly squash negative thoughts when they arise by replacing them with positive ones. This is something I run into lifting all the time, because you'll try to pick something up and it feels too heavy. Like, you know, you get the bar and you're trying to get it off the floor and it feels like it's glued. It just isn't going to move. You can go, well, you know, that's really hard and that's a really heavy weight. Or you can go, man, it's going to rock when I can lift that.
No.
And the latter one, just switching over to that as soon as you detect that negativity, that will help you. Because what really gets you on the negativity is the dwelling on it. Because everybody has something negative pop through their head on occasion.
Oh, yeah. Our friend Guy is really good about this. I remember 8 years ago. Was that when they left?
Yeah.
But 8 years ago, his mom passed away and he and his wife moved. Like, they packed everything up, quit their jobs, and moved to Florida to help his dad through the rough time and kind of help take care of him, get him back on his feet. And when they went down there, they were both, like, they had money saved up, but they were struggling after about a year or so because they were trying to find jobs in a market that wasn't that great. And I just remember every time I talked to him, he had something else. Like, I would talk to him and he was all excited, you know, about what he had going on, and, you know, I'm going to be doing this and this and this. And when that didn't work out, he didn't dwell on, oh man, that didn't work out. What am I going to do? I would call him a week later, and if the previous one hadn't worked out, he was already on to the next one.
Yeah.
And the next one, until he found something that worked.
Yeah.
And that was,
and killing that negativity beforehand. Because otherwise he'd be a bum right now. I mean, easily. Like, that's financial ruin for people that can't manage their state.
Yeah. And that was, they're both professionals, but they took jobs teaching spin classes at a gym to have jobs and to have some income while they were looking for more permanent positions. And they put everything into that. You know, they went 100% when they were there.
Yeah.
They didn't treat it like, oh, this is just a job till I get what I'm really looking for. Yeah, they went in and they gave it their all.
Well, and they saw the opportunity there, right? Because, you know, what if they had gone in there and they turned out to be the best spin instructors in the world and they decided to build their own course?
Yeah.
It makes you open to opportunity when you get rid of the negative stuff. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you just don't know where it's going to go.
That's true.
So, you know, we talked about things that kind of help you get motivated and stay that way. There's some other things you have to do as well to protect your motivation. While this kind of dovetails with the previous points, there's a few things we kind of wanted to point out that are a little different. And the biggest one is don't overdo it. Like, if you've decided that, okay, I'm going to get in shape and I'm going to start working out.
And you haven't been working out previously?
Yeah. And you hadn't been dieting or doing anything else. Like, you don't want to start out going, okay, I'm going to work out 5 times a week and I'm going to go, fully paleo on my diet. And, oh, by the way, I don't drink coffee. So, you know, I don't know how I'm going to get my caffeine. Switching all those off at the same time is a great way to completely fail immediately. You know, do something small. and, you know, as your starting point. Just go work out once a week, just a little bitty short workout. You know, part of this is getting technique down, because it's a whole lot easier to build on a weak success than it is to build on a massive failure.
Well, yeah.
You know, looking at many of the software projects I've worked on, you know, like I can tell you that it's just a lot easier.
I mean, this is the concept of minimum viable product.
Right. It's a weak success. It's okay, this is enough that people might be interested, but it's not all there yet. Then you can work with it. That's also what I was saying when I was talking about, you know, just go on something is sort of this concept of take something small that you can do, not do the whole thing.
Avoid the naysayers. You'll have people in your life that will suddenly get very cranky with you when you start to succeed. We kind of talked about this a little bit. Some of it may be jealousy. Some of it may be hidden jealousy. Like they won't realize that they're being that way.
Yeah. And they don't want to see you get hurt. My favorite ones are the secret kings though. And that's the people that are like, well, you're out there and you're speaking on a podcast and you're trying to become an expert. You know, if you were a real expert like me, you would be just sitting here doing the work. Like I've had that conversation with someone and it's a thing of, well, you know, see, I'm king, but nobody knows it. Then you're not king. And you'd be surprised how often that gets to be the motivation too. And you don't need that when you're trying to get stuff done. Like get stuff done. Don't hang out with those kind of people.
You just got to step away from them. Get enough sleep, relaxation, alone time, whatever, in order to be able to recharge.
Yeah, and the big deal here is most of the time, if you've got a major life goal that you're trying to achieve and if you're doing something where you have to maintain motivation, it typically is over a longer haul. You're not trying to run a sprint, you're trying to run a marathon. So you've got to take care of your mental, you know, being able to protect your mental state while you're doing that. And
yeah,
not pushing as quite as hard.
It comes down to a balance thing. Before I started working as a full-time developer, I had other jobs that weren't development related. I could come home from working the other job and go straight into developing and working on learning or working on a project I was working on with you, stuff like that. But when I started doing a development job, you kind of get overloaded.
Yeah, it's
on it, and you need kind of that downtime.
It's marginal reduction. It's one of those deals where it's like, okay, I can push the extra 2% and get to 100%, but that 2% is going to be about as good as like a tenth of a percent. So why would I not just spend the time relaxing?
Exactly.
Another thing is to pick realistic interim goals, and you should be setting smaller goals that build towards your larger one, you know, like we discussed earlier. You shouldn't really try to write a book in a month, even though you probably can. It's a lot easier to do something like, okay, I'm going to write a chapter this week. In other words, build a goal that's still a fair bit of work and it's still a stretch so that you grow from it, but not, you know, where it's not crushing.
On this, I would say it depends on if your full-time job is writing a book,
right,
as opposed to if this is a side thing. As a side thing, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, if it's your full-time job writing a book, I mean, you come into the same kind of set of decisions that you get with full-time coding, right? Sometimes you just have to get crap done. Nothing else matters and you just got to plow through it. But this is more of, okay, this is an additional goal. This is something I want to do that's a life improvement. How do I do this in a sustainable manner? And the way you do that is you set goals that stretch you a little bit, but not too much. Another thing you've got to do when you want to actually achieve something in your life is get away from social procrastination. Facebook, Twitter, pretty much any of your social media is fantastic for this sort of stuff. A lot of a lot of social gatherings are this way too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how many different, like, you know, meetup group things you've been to, but if you notice that they're for a pretty high percentage of them that you don't actually come out of there with anything, it's just, oh, I've got to go and hang. And it's like, that's fine if that's what your goal was for that event, but it's horrible if your goal was, okay, I want to get something out of this that improves my life. And Facebook, your goal is never going to be to improve something.
Unless you're working on your social media marketing. But
yeah.
Well, so that's why with our meetup, you know, we've had the success we have because we try to make it so that people walk away with something from it. Even with our social gatherings.
Yeah, especially with those.
Yeah, because it's meant to be socializing, but it's also meant to be networking,
yeah.
You know, and you know, it's a relaxed you know, networking area for developers and people learning to code to come out and meet and talk. And we've had people come out and meet their future bosses at them. You know, yeah. That's not the set goal for it. But networking is part of that socializing.
It's just one thing when it's, okay, this is the goal of it. It's another thing when it's, well, I have to go do this because reasons. Another thing you need to do is make progress every single day, including holidays. I coded this morning.
I did not.
Yeah. Well, I know our friend Jason coded yesterday.
Yeah.
All day because he was sending me messages on Google Hangouts. And I did not code yesterday. I cooked.
Yeah.
And then I slept. And I think that's pretty much all I did yesterday. But you don't have to do a whole lot, but you just have to do enough where you don't start a slump. And, you know, exercise and eat well. It's really easy when you're working on something big to let these things slip. I did that this past spring working on Agulous because I was doing 70 to 80 hours a week between the day job and Agulous, and did not lift, did not meditate, did not eat particularly well. And I mean, it caught up with me.
I was coming over here for about a month and a half. Every week, 2 days a week to work out, to lift.
Yeah.
And then I hurt my back and I was out for a couple of weeks, and then it was Thanksgiving and then I was sick. Yeah. I mean, this happened to me too. It's, you know, of course I've kept up my other exercise, which was mostly just walking my dog, but yeah, we go for pretty long walks and stuff. And then I've put a lot of effort because I knew I couldn't be lifting because of hurting my back and stuff. I put my effort into the diet side of it, and I continued to lose weight.
Well, motivation is just, it's really hard to keep it when your health is going to crap.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you start, you know, feeling a little crummy just because, you know, hey, I've been eating at Hardee's, you know, 4 days a week. That's Carl's Jr. for the people out west. But
it's easy too, because we actually have a Chick-fil-A in the building.
Yeah. And we've got a Burger King walking distance from where I work. And but I ate there a lot.
I was just saying, it's easy to let your health or let your exercise and eating right slip when you can go, all right, I don't have time to go out and get something healthy, so I'm going to...
I'll get something quick.
Something quick because
I've got to... Come back and get the work done.
Yeah, I've got to get the work done. Or I don't have time to go to the gym because I need to come home and work on this.
Right. And that was the thing that got me this spring. Yeah. And what ended up happening is I got depressed during the summer.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen much.
So finally, announce your successes. Yeah, you get to brag a little on this one. You know, the positive feedback from doing so, it's going to help you. The negative feedback just shows you the people that you need to keep at arm's length or cut out from your life.
It's really strange how often that comes up where you just have to... When you are successful, you'll find that there's people that are really overjoyed and they're happy for you, and you want to keep those people around you. And then there's people that get irritated by it, and they will make themselves very apparent. When you have actually achieved something, part of the deal is you want to actually show it off because you get that nice little bit of feedback loop, and that's important. So it's very worth doing.
So that pretty much wraps us up before we close everything out. Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
We kind of talked a little bit about burnout and, well, we really talked about motivation, but burnout is the other side of this, right? And a lot of developers run into this. If you stay in the career long enough, it's going to happen to you. We're always a little too optimistic about what we can achieve just in general because, hey, you know, we're engineering types and, you know, we can do whatever. If you are feeling burnout, the way out is not through. You really have to try to get some of the load off of yourself. If your job is such that you can't, you need to look for something else. If the way you've structured your business and, you know, like your consulting or whatever, you know, is such that you can't get some of the load off of you, you need to get out of it. And I know that really, really sounds harsh, but there's really not a good way to fix burnout except for stopping the burn. And so the other side of, you know, maintaining your motivation is realizing when you've hit the point where you can't fix it to start doing something else. It's probably better, you know, once you realize that you're burned out, that you really, really have to take time and get out of that state. So that's what I've got.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.